Genau, und ich möchte über ein Thema sprechen, dem ich mich seit vielen Jahren widme und was mir sehr am Herzen liegt und was mir auch Hoffnung gibt bei dem ganzen Klima.
Katastrophen, Gedöns, und das sind genau Nahrungswälder, Food Forest, komplexe Agroforstsysteme. Wir designen, pflanzen und betreiben Food Forests in drei unterschiedlichen Klimazonen. Hier sehen wir eine Fläche im Süden vom Senegal, das ist ein
subtropischer. And this is a situation within a year. So after 1 year, we have a very vivid, fruitful soil, and people, plants are growing like crazy. It is like a green explosion, and it's really nice to see how strong life is and how much the plants really need it. The rabbit hole is quite deep. Subtropical agroforests, it's a very wide topic. I didn't study. I'm more hippie punk who traveled a lot. I'm continuously learning. So this is the point I am at the moment. But I think it's nice to share it. And I am very lucky that I can spend lots of time in Africa. That's where I started my work. That's why lots of the examples are in south tropical regions. But we also do it in Germany. When I'm talking too fast, please stop me. That's the agenda for today. But you'll see anyways. First, I would like to talk about climate crisis and the biodiversity crisis that we have, because sometimes people are not aware of it and how the problem evolved. And also, being an anarchist and a punk doesn't mean you're a climate activist. And because it's here, you can see the last IPCC report. It's an institution who's researching on the climate crisis, and it collects lots of reports. And what they research, it's a fact. Here you can see the different paths that humanity could take. And it depends how we choose to act in the following years. So we have 1.2 degree of the temperature increased. So it doesn't need much for tremendous change. And what we already experience is extreme weather conditions and burning forests. 2021, we had 9 million hectares of burned forest. That's disgusting. And those tipping points, they depend on other tipping points. Yes. Who knows how many fossil resources we are using during the year? Seven. At the moment, it's 3 in Germany. That means that we are using 3 times as much as the planetary resources have. In the USA, it's 5. And in Yemen, for example, people, they live from 0.5 times the resources.
Also,
I think it's nice to talk about the ecological footprint. You can do it online, and then you can just try it out. Excuse me. So then we know where we are at. There you can see the green area. When we use resources within this green area, then we have an ecological way of living. In the second circle, we are already passing the planetary resources. And in the third circle, we surely passed it and we don't know what happens. And then also science cannot predict what will happen if we continue like we do now. So these are processes on which our life depends, and without it, it's going to be really difficult. Six of them are already very at the limit, and I would like to talk about them. What we also see there is the transition from the Anthropocene, that's the time we were in the last thousands of years. I didn't understand the number, sorry. And now we are in a new age called the Holocene. It's a time. Yeah, can you? People are lamenting that it's the other way around. Okay, so it's the other way around. Really? It's very long periods of time where we had very stable times and we didn't have much change in the temperatures, and that's why life could develop in such a stable way. But we influenced the systems too much. So the time that we're facing now is a new geological time because of the geophysical influence that we had as humans. And without all these things, we could not survive. And I would like to talk about those points there. That's all connected to the food sector and agriculture. So I think if we produce food in a different way, it's it's a good idea. I don't know. yeah, we're from Holocene to the other age. I would like to talk about one or two tipping points. So we always look at this climate crisis and the carbon dioxide, but there are several crises. But also biomass crisis is very relevant. So the biomass in general is decreasing, and that's very dangerous. On every level, we have losses. So we're talking about the sixth mass extinction. And the last ones were in times where there were like asteroids crashing on Earth. We also lose biodiversity. We lose opportunities in terms of medicine, nature, food, bionic, parasites. So many people, they have problems with their stomach. And there were some researchers who said there's a frog in Amazonia. And they have a trick how to turn down the acid level in the stomach. And then they were looking for the frog, but it was already extinct. So the opportunity to find new medicine is decreasing. Yeah. just about distance, a bit further, closer. So this is the web of life. So resilience and the chance for resilience is decreasing. And often a functioning ecosystem is also connected to culture and religion, etc. I'm spending lots of time in Senegal, and there's this sacred forest, and there, it's very important. So if species get extinct and ecosystems collapse, we lose clean water and climate regulation, etc. When those species extinct, then those areas are affected, and we have a problem. The genetic diversity is also decreasing, and it happens drastically and very fast. Here you can see the amount of carbon dioxide that the food sector is producing, and it's enormous. It's up to 28%. That's a lot. And there you can see the carbs are very useless. One carb that we produce, we burn 10 carbs during the production, so it's a very sick calculation. And if you see what ecosystems can do, it's very weird. One big problem is the consume of meat. There you can see we are in 10th place of 9. What? So living vegan or mostly vegan has already a huge impact. And very sad, but also a good example, is that the tropical rainforests in South America, they reach tipping points and they are becoming deserts. And this is really crazy. And it really is connected to the meat consumption. And it's because lots of soya got imported to feed the animal that were killed later. Who invented it? Here you can see throughout the centuries who produced most of the carbon dioxide, and it's the global north. So we should be aware of it. And in my work, it's very important to raise awareness about the responsibility of the global north. On the one hand, you can see who produced the carbon dioxide. And on the other hand, you can see the most affected areas.
That's not fair. And like this. I think we should be responsible for this because we have also profited from this explosion. We could travel, learn, study, and so on. And this puts us in the duty to also put efforts to into the change. So what we do, what the states and the EU is doing, what our states and EU is doing, instead of finding global solutions together with our brothers and sisters in the global south. Instead of that, we militarized our external borders and strengthened the asylum right. This is quite a strong fact, but I think we all know that an answer to the global boundaries, to the crossing of ecological borderlines, That was 2016. There has been scientists that brought out the Sustainable Development Goals. This says the idea of the model is that society and ecological system rely on the maintenance of the biosphere. There's the idea inside that everything's connected and depends on everything else. So we're working towards this Sustainable Development Goals, but it's not easy. So we come to the Paradise Forest Gardens with the projects in the Global South, which has touched 13 of the 20 Here we can see the ecosystem benefits, which we benefit from sustainable agriculture and food sector. To raise the biodiversity, the building of humus and living soils, erosion controls, carbon sequestration, purification of air and water, increase in water storage and retention capacity, cooling of the climate, production of rain, resilient crops that don't need pesticides, habitat for native flora and fauna, diverse and high-yield food production. The nature is really strong and powerful and is giving us what we need, and there's a chance in seeing this more. And who understood how life worked, how life developed on our beautiful planet from eroded areas towards climax forests and a system that we live in now, and this is how we can try to build up more ecological agriculture. Forests from 500 hectare and bigger produce rain. There's a person, sorry I missed the name, that has a big area in Brazil, and he has a farm that has a lot of forest, and there's rainbows on top of this area because without rain, because the water is coming from the soil. So we have 50%. Sorry, that was too fast. There's different climate zones. And in every climate zone, there's a different challenge and different needs. We have different soil qualities, conditions, amount of rain, wind directions, sun, animals that live there, ecological influences, different species, and different resources from people that are working on specific areas. There's people with a lot of money and small areas, and there's people that have no money but they're friends, and so we have to design for the resources that are in place and what we want to reach. Do we want to reach to produce a lot of food, or do we want to do a slow work? So this is points that you have to make sure you have seen them while doing the design in the different climate zones. Of course, it's different, but there can also be two forest gardens next to each other that look different. So, for example, here it can look like a fruit, or it could be an edge of a forest towards the south where sun can reach all the layers of flowers and everyone can get enough, all the plants can get enough sun, and it could also be like subtropical areas and tropical areas that you have hundreds of species and that can produce a lot of work. And of course, an area in England looks different from an area in Congo. So you see here the oldest forest garden in Austria, and you see one in the Netherlands, and then you're in the ecological village in the east of Germany, in Sinden. Sorry. So there's no copy-paste. Every area has to be seen specifically and written a design for it, but still there's principles and rules that are similar in every area, and with it we work, and this is our main guidance. And these principles are conclusions from watching nature and working ecological system ecosystems, and there's a lot of indigenous knowledge in that from indigenous people. We work with principles of permaculture in the tropical and building up like agriculture with experiences we have made in the last years ourselves. So there's a subtropical system close to Berlin. On the left side, in the middle, you have a place in Portugal, also a subtropical system, where you have, we are doing vegetables. And on the right side, you have pictures from the Perma Food Forest in Senegal. The first step for work. Here you see the beginning of our system, how we did the design in Senegal. And next to it, you see the subtropical lines in Portugal. And then on the right side, you have the growing plants. First step is building up the soil. We need a sound soil that is rich of mushrooms and microorganisms. That's the base of the garden. And for that, I need biomass that I put together and have it on the soil. And depending on the climate zone and how much is already there, I have to start from a different point. So start is to see how big is the area, and I share it in four parts. And I bring all the biomass from the whole area on 1/4 and start there. We also cut trees if they exist, but we don't cut them down. What we had is biomass we brought together on the first two pictures. On the first picture, you can see how we do things in like Sahara Desert or this kind of similar climates. So we bring like cut grass, and by this build up the soil.
And in the beginning, it can be a good idea to get some substances from outside, like wood lying around or the neighbors. In Senegal, we are partly using fish meal, flour, or so we, this is to get the nutrients that the microorganisms need. The principle is that we do not get in the long term anything from outside, but we're using what the system produces. Our nowadays agriculture is based on the principle that everything is imported from outside, which is the opposite in permaculture. Here we can see our little friends with whom we are building the soil. Up to 8 billion microorganisms can live in 1 square meter of healthy soil. We speak of ecofilm, that's the first centimeters of soil. there is the most life on Earth. In a healthy forest, this can be up to 25 tons of living mass per hectare. And in nowadays agriculture, this is reduced to 4 to 5 tons. Here we can see this somehow in the middle. We put the mulch on top, and then we got all these white fibers. Not here?
No, a bit further, like this.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
It's about the distance.
It's the distance. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So what you see in the middle is the white fibers, that's the mycelium. All plants in the ground are connecting via the mycelium and then communicating and supporting each other with nutrients. And what you can see on the top right, that's some form of bacteria. They can get the nitrogen from the air and cooperate with these bacteria and bring the nitrogen into the ground so that the sensory system is strong and all plants have what they need. This is leading to a healthy ecosystem. So on the left you can see a plant that's called bitter leaf, and you can see how we cut it and put it on the ground to mulch it. And this, we always grow plants in our form of agriculture to cut it and bring the carbon to the ground. Where am I? You can never see Earth, this bare soil in this system. It always needs to be covered. It can get very hot, and on the surface it can get 40, 45 degrees. So this is where the life in the soil does. So when the soil is bare, the sun is drying out the humidity in the soil, and the wind is carrying off too. This is why we always need to have the soil covered. Another thing that we need to take into consideration is the production of biochar. We produce it like that in a pyrolyzed oven. So when so we pee on top of the biochar, because the nitrogen and phosphate contained in the urine is beneficial for the ground, and then we bring it into the soil. This is forbidden by law, but on a smaller scale we can do that. When we chop it down considerably, then cows can eat it, and then they their excrements neutrify the ground. And then it has a huge it It's a very porous material, being able to contain a lot of water. So with the biochar we can sequester carbon and we bring it into the sun, into the ground, which is a reverse effect to the climate crisis. And they should be sold for about 1,000 years. This is what we need to do. So by extracting the carbon, by extracting oil and gas, we bring it back into the ground. Biochar is just cool. Then in the naturally grown forests, they always grow in layers. And this, along this principle, we grow our food forests. And here you can see the percentages that I put down. This shows the biomass of green leaves, which is getting more when you go further to the ground. So you have the high layer and then going down to the bushes and to the ground covering plants and vegetables and the like. And what is very logical is that in the lowest layer there needs to be the most biomass in green leaves. This is where the water condensates, so the water stays on the ground and is not extracted. When you have a look at the huge plantages, like in Brandenburg, we have a lot of monoculture, then you can see that very high up we have the top of the trees, and on the ground there's hardly any vegetation. So a lot of these plantations that we made, they were kind of made to produce drafts and fires. Planting these plants simultaneously and by building the ground, it is all interconnected and supporting. This is a short picture of our insight into our permaculture food forest in Senegal. I would like to talk somewhat more about permaculture. Permaculture means a long-term permanent agriculture. We make the designs for about 150 years and longer. Permaculture was invented by Mollison and Holdgren. In Australia, they were sitting in the forest and were watching nature and saw that things go wrong. And on the basis of these observations, and Holdgren was very influenced by indigenous wisdom, by the Aborigines. Here you can see the permaculture logo, the rainbow snake, and the ark, old symbols of the Aboriginal worldview. So you can see that this wisdom is contained in the permaculture. This is very old knowledge that has been reinvented. In 1984, he was awarded an alternative Nobel Prize, and in 1984 he wrote this book that you can see, the designer's manual, that I can only recommend to read. It is about working with nature and not against nature. What you can see on the right is the first project garden in the south of Senegal, where I started to build the soil and a food forest. Permaculture is a design system based on ethical principles. These three pillars of the ethic is earth care. This is the careful care for the earth. To know that this is a valuable gift that we were granted, we have to take into account cycles and boundaries and may not surpass them, and to build regenerative systems without which we do not have a basis to live. And the people care is the social component. It's the care for people. That's the self-determination right of all people, access to basic needs and freedom. So we design to create safe systems for people to be safe and happy. On Kant's basis, what you don't want another to do to you, you don't do it to others. And the third principle is fair share. That's the economic principle. That's keeping within the planetary boundaries. It's a self-regulation. It's a degrowth. It's a limited consumption and to take into consideration future generations. And this, for me, contains the absolute capitalism critique. This is just a short excursion. And I think that we often, humanity is looking for answers, where can we go? And the left movement is also having problems finding alternatives. And I think we can find in the fair share a principle of, we can find a lot of solutions, like the careful treatment of each other and the fair. So from these principles, pillars of ethics, the design principles were developed after having observed an area for quite a long time and seen how many plants grow and when and where. Then I start working on my design. Originally, permaculture stems from agriculture. There is nowadays also a lot of social permaculture, and this toolbox can also be applied to the rest of life, like how do I found a company? How do we treat each other? We can always look at these principles and try to go into the right direction. And many of these things reflect what I understand by anarchy. And many things are just fun. And we just need to learn how to deal with it. We have to look in everyday life, like observing the margins. Like in the forest, at the edge of the forage, there's the most life. It's the most riches. And the same in the cities, that we do not produce garbage, waste. So it is all designed to think in circles and to sustain life. I'd be pleased if you had a look at these principles and try to implement them into your lives. So we can talk for days on these things, but we do not have that much time. So on the upper left, you can see transformation of agriculture. So there's a tractor which was produced by steel. So the energy we need to keep up such a form of agriculture is just immense. And what you can see there in the middle is the last bit of hummus left. It is said that we have about 60 harvest circuits left before the hummus is gone. And our aim is to transform the system. So when we have a look at the forest gardens, we can see how much less pollutants we create and that we are building the soil. And here on the right you can see a small example from the project in the semi-arid desert. What you can see here is the flow of the water in the short rain period that we have over there. We have 400 milliliters of rain, but very little. And we want to keep all the energy coming to our field, on the field. And this is why we dug pits, so that the water is accumulated there and the wind is bringing in seeds so that the plants can grow there and that we store all the energy and it doesn't cost a lot of money. I didn't understand that. Could you please explain? We had to look at the area. We see where the rainwater flows, and when you have a look at the end, and we see this is where the water is leaving our ground. This is the place where we dig the pits, and then the wind helps us by bringing in biomass and seeds. This is one example how we can work and which doesn't cost any money. And here we see a syntropic system with a covered ground, a food forest where we are planting bananas in the third or fourth year, and the farmers from the region come from the region and they ask us, what chemicals do you apply on them that they grow that back? And we let them know that we do not bring in any chemicals and try to explain them our way of working, our system. So the farmers start copying our system because it's very successful. And another beautiful example are the compost toilets, dry toilets. This is by way of this, we can bring in our urine and our excrements into the feeds. With our excrements, we have to be careful because it might contain unhealthy particles. And we also need to be careful but with the water we are bringing into our fields, because this is coming from the Sahara, and we do need to take this all into account. Systemic. So we sequester carbon, and our irrigation system is working by solar panels. This is easy, of course, in the global south, more easy than here in the north. And this is how we can sustain the cycles and to use, make good use of the energy. Please slow down somewhat, I will try my best. So permaculture is a worldwide grassroots movement which just keeps on growing. And everywhere, many brilliant people are making just amazing projects. Now I would like to tell you something about centropic agriculture. Here we can see an area in Portugal, which is about 2 years old, a system with in the direction of the north-south, which is barely irrigated with a diversity of plants. We see eucalyptus, we see poplars, citrus trees, 21 species of citrus trees, figs. These are the first cash crops that we can also sell on the market. The grapes are growing along the trees, so they do not need any structure to wind around. And apart from that, there is a sheer abundance of plants, like raspberries, different forest trees, oaks, olive trees, cactus, figs, pistachio, radish, whatever. It's all highly interconnected, and it's just amazing to see how this abundance can grow without any irrigation. The centropic agriculture was invented by Ernst Goetz, who was a Swiss. He was working in a laboratory and was asked to do genetic engineering on plants to make them adaptive to the climate change. And he just said, that's crazy. Why would I do that? Nature is so brilliant in achieving this task. So he stopped working there, traveled the world. And now for 40 years, he's been experimented on a larger scale in Argentina. And he had also been influenced by indigenous people in this region.
I'm talking about how things are connected. It's a good input if people want to investigate further. Is the Gaia principle from Lovelock and Margulis. I think they started in the 70s to try and understand the system that the world is a connected organism, that everything's dependent on each other. That's the Gaia principle. That's basically what we do. We plant plant collectives and not singular plants. Centropic agriculture, centropy. That's the heart of the power of nature, the development of complex structured systems that over the time they develop from something simple to something complex. This is how, what life does, and that's what nature does. And that's what plant can do really well. And that's how life developed on our planet, through cooperation, working together, and solidarity. From the first algae and moss that worked together, started working together into ecosystems of climax forests, big forests that produce nutritional elements that are necessary. And this is the moment where big animals developed and also human developed. The opposite is entropy, something developing from something complex to something simple. That's what industrial agriculture does, which is really linear and simple. There's no meaning and nothing is connected. Plants are masters of syntropy. They take the energy from sun via synthesis, photosynthesis, and they organize and optimize the power of sun and to develop into complex system of livings. This, by this, they develop the base of life that we have. They accumulate energy, and it's crazy to drive around fertilizer through the whole work to bring it on the soils. We should have learned more. The use of oil was too fast, and we were too fast to develop further without looking into nature. And this is also where you can see how capitalism works and the dynamic of life. We use to work on our areas. In Greek, syntropy means together, and this is how we develop anti-fragile systems. We want to live on spirals that construct something instead of spirals that where things die down. Also, syntropic agriculture has principles. We have different plants in different climate zones, and this is everywhere the same. And this is what we work with. That's our tools, the maximization of photosynthesis, meaning agriculture in different layers and different plants, working in natural succession. I will come back to this later. The covered soil and the dense planting, the cutting in selective disruption in the right moment. By cutting things in the right moment, hormones are distributed in the systems from the cutted plants that through the micelle and the connection in the soil is passed on to other plants, and this is how all plants grow faster. This is the way to optimize building up systems. And here I see the chance to work against the climate crisis and to have a chance that we continue being here. The pooling of energy by the cutted plants feed the ground. The usage of ecophysiological function of plants, the ecophysiology, is how the environment has impact on the plants, and the ecophysiological function of the plant is how the plant influences the surrounding, which plant interact with which plants, and what are the results of that. That's the main task in our work, in our studies: understand your plants and understand what it's doing. In all climate zones, we can find different plants that have the same tasks in a system. And this is very complex, especially when you work in different climate zones, to know all these plants. And I think this is something that I still struggle for me. And again, observing the systems well, we put poison on the plants because we have invasive plants and insects that destroy other plants. But that's all plants and points that shows that the system doesn't work well, which is actually a help to understand that the system is not working well and to learn how to improve the system. That to improve it, maybe you have to put other plants. And this is how we work. And that's very interesting to improve on that. here you can see the steps of succession, so the way that ecosystems take from the placenta and to the climax forests. And we plant all the plants from different layers at the same time. The tasks of the plants can change over time. For example, in the beginning, the sunflower is the mother tree, the highest tree that gives shade for the system and that helps it growing. And this role, after time, the poplar or the eucalyptus take this task. And in the end, it's the big walnut tree that has a big harvest. So we plant in height and also by time. Nature works with some kind of succession always, and this way we try to follow. Here we can see a small syntropic gill that we have planted some weeks ago. That's Jasper and Frida, our syntropic experts. The guild is close to Berlin. And there's 21 different plants that have different roles and tasks over time. I will not name them all. It's beautiful plants inside. What you can see in Brandenburg, there was hardly any rain in the last times, and everyone has big problems with the dry, and we didn't water this guild, and there was very little rain, and still it was growing really well, and as you can see, it looks really good. It's really important that we put a lot of biomass on the soil, and we mulched it. That kept the moisture in the soil, and we put wood, and also lignin is an important food for the plants, and plant coal. And we're also learning in this year and planting. The small guild is not a big action, and you can learn a lot from it to get into the topic. What I do when I put new things like this guild, what do I have in this area? And I try to find soil that already has ecozymes in it and different stuff inside, best is from different areas. And then everything will go faster. Also, these systems make it possible that there's different harvest in different times. If you have monoculture, you have one or maximum two harvests a year from two different plants. And here you have always different things and all these ecosystem services that come with it. And to have this kind of gardens, and like if you live in a community, it makes it much more resilient to have many different plants in different times. So for example, if one plant has some kind of illness, there's many different other plants that you can harvest. It's very stable. So for example, in the first month you have radish, and the second month you have salad, and then the third month you have eggplant, and in this then you have artemisia and other healing plants, and then you have bananas. And the 10th month that also bring mulch and biomass, and the 13th month you have ginger, and then later you have fruit, nuts, oil, and a lot of biomass, which is equivalent with which equals energy, and that makes it possible to improve the climate. All these systems, they don't need fertilization, transport ways, or poison. It's important to think enough about which plants do I have, what can they bring, what is there, what do I need. A reason why I share all this is because there's a lot of activists here that I would wish for climate rights change movement that we would see building up forest gardens as one of the things that we promote, because I think it's important that we also show alternatives and are not just against something but also provide solutions, because also politicians and people with money, they have a hard time supporting this kind of systems. And for me, it's important that we also, as climate activists, we are louder in asking for alternatives as chances for improvement. I want to speak shortly about our association and how it developed. Basically, I was driving with a bus through Africa, and I got hooked up in Senegal. That was in 2004. 1 year later, I started a plant for healing, a garden for healing plants. For example, Artemia, that helps against malaria. If everyone in malaria areas would have this plant in their garden, that would help a lot. Shortly after, in 2007, we founded an association in Germany to support this project better. We developed a sustainability path with different people from Africa and Europe. There was a pharmacy for natural medicine, workshops, and guided tours. We had ups and downs, and this was for me the school, how I learned about permaculture and these kind of circles, systems. Here you can see part of the team that came together and is doing different things in the different areas. We're not an anarchist group, but very diverse, coming together of different people from Europe and Africa, that we share this idea of building up systems. We all work in volunteer work, and we sometimes reach our boundaries because it's really exhausting, but we're really into it, and it's a lot of fun also. At the moment, from this association, we're developing the Food Forest Initiative that brings together different fields and areas from different people where we share knowledge. I want to shortly speak about the fields that we have. We have five areas in three different climate zones. I think it's important to have these pilot projects so people can see how agriculture can work, so it can be copied. So if someone says, let's do like a forest garden, so people have an idea what this would look like.
We are part of the climate justice movement, and we work with the nature and also for the nature. Additionally, we are trying to design all the fields in a way that we cannot sell them afterwards, or that they can be privatized so that they're collectivized. So we want to get rid of that capitalist logic. Here you can see some pictures from a project garden in Jamarek in Senegal. And I was very lucky to learn a lot. This is Alex. He's living there. He's working in a tree school there. There's Moringa. There are ups and downs, and many people who are active in that area. I will not talk too much about healing plans. It's a very important part, and they are increasing resilience in the collective. And we're not dependent on the pharmacy and the whole industry. But of course, hospitals are really useful, but still there's lots of power in it. We are designing those areas in a holistic way. We're not only doing it for the forest garden, but we design it as a whole, and that creates autonomous regions who don't need external resources. So we can do it all ourselves. We are confident and we're autonomous, and we can say, yeah, fuck the rest. 2018-19, I said with four other friends that we can start the first perma forest. Because we already have some skills, and after 20 years in Africa, we learned a lot. And that's how we started. Meanwhile, there are people who are in workshops and schools coming, many volunteers from Europe and Africa. There's lots of recognition from the region as well. Here in the middle, you can see Frida. Frida is living there for many years and is the project manager. Without her, it would not be possible. There's Armani, and he's also living on the field there. And those are the two main characters supporting the project. There, it's a funny picture. It's fruits in the trunk. And those different layers that we use while we grow the food, it also shows in the trunk. So on the lowest level, there's the sweet potatoes. Then we have bananas as the second layer on top, and the papayas are again one layer higher, and then another plant which holds onto other plants. We also try to transform the products, so we're drying them and we are trying to change it. So the farmers who are working there can be more resilient and financially stable. So we have more safety for the people who are living there in order not to reproduce colonial standards. We don't have a true cost account. All the products are not really taking into account the destruction of the nature, and we do not get more money from those healing processes.
Le prix est pas plus haut.
Ah oui, oui, c'est ça.
C'est ça.
hyper inclus.
Ah oui, c'est ça. Le prix de la destruction de la nature n'est pas compris dans les prix des produits agricoles dans le monde. Et du coup, voilà.
So it's nice to just have higher prices for the products that we produce. Here you can see the pilot project. It's a forest garden in Berlin. It's in our temperate zone. There is going to be a solidarity agricultural system being built. It's a quite big group who are farming there. Ramos, one person from the team, is writing a concept for the agricultural use for the forests in order to pass on the knowledge. This is the region in southern Senegal. It's a semi-arid zone, half desert. This is Claudia and Pap. They're living there, and they initiated the area and supporting it. And with them, we are writing the permaculture design and starting to plant the first agroforest systems. It's extremely interesting. It's a challenge. And we hope that in 10 years, we're going to have a green paradise. And I'm very convinced that it works. Here next to it, we can see the different zones. Well, maybe that's too deep into permaculture. The most difficult thing is the mulch that we get. It's very few, and we take tests from the soil. And until we have a soil that is fertile, which has enough energy for trees, that's the most difficult step in the beginning without it becoming dry again. And it's also fun and it's a challenge. Here we have our newest field. It's 18 hectares in Oderbruch. That's close to Poland when you look from Berlin. This is Arne and Esther, the two people initiating it, and they are providing the fields. There will be different food forest systems being built and a vegetable garden, but also a community and a house. And it's based on the energy production. And it was a present from the people who own the area. It's queer, inclusive, and feminist. And a syndicate is taking over. And if you want to take part, there's still space, and you can participate if you want. And we're the face at the moment is observing, and we will soon start to design the fields. At the same time, we started the so-called Waldgartenprojekt, the forest garden project. And we will digitalize all the projects, and we're networking. So there are many grassroots projects that are being built at the moment, and there is hope. The name is Wolof. It's called Zazarale. And the idea behind it is that the knowledge of the plants is going anywhere, and but also that we can go anywhere because, yeah, we want to fight borders. Within ecological movement, I only know the German movement. We have lots of fascists who, like Anastasia, blood in the ground, who pretend not to be fascist, who try to invade the permaculture movements in Germany. So it's very, important that you, be aware of that. So the readers and workshops, the internet page, it's called FAN. We are against fascist eco-movements in Germany. And our communities are very resilient, and yeah, we're a diverse group. Okay. So basically, the pesticides and the toxics, they are the anti-feminism, the sexism, the racism. So get support if you observe something like that. So I'm finished now. I would just like to share some thoughts and ideas. So how can we spread the knowledge within our movements and fights? So we're in multiple crises, but in crisis there's also opportunity. So this is where I'm at, and in eco-anarchism, there might be some solutions, but basically I don't care how you call it. So I'm open for feedback. So there's some Darwinist view, but and also the way capitalism functions, it bases on the right of the stronger person. So the big one is eating up the small one. But that's not true. So systems are built on synergies, cooperation, and solidarity. And neoliberal structures, they're almost religious and fundamental. And they pretend that it's something God created. So we're trying to make a difference. We're trying to build up different systems. So we're just part of this Gaia organism, and we are not on top of it. I'm not better than the ant. I'm not better than any other plant. I'm just one part of it, and we need everyone for it. In this microorganism, every plant and every insect has its task, and everybody, also in our communities, has a skill. And even if it's not so visible at first, we should trust in it that we can become stronger together. Here, for example, you can see it from a permafood forest. There is a taro, that's this big plant in the middle with the big leaves. It's really good in photosynthesis. It can contain water. In the back, there's papaya, which is pulling the system up. It's producing food and mulch. Moringa, for example, it's a superfood. And we can produce really nurturing food. This is also fighting famine. If you dry this plant, it's really nutritious, and we could pass it on. Then we have lemongrass, which covers the ground and protects insects. It's a stone breaker, protecting the soil from erosion. And then we have a white mahogany. It's very nice for active coal. Then pea, which is fixing toxic gas in the ground. And then there are several others, like the mahogany trees, which is pulling up the water from the ground and making the whole system very resilient. And this selfless way of just giving and the trust that we can have enough for everyone. This is something that we need to internalize. We need to trust in it. So I just see this principle of earth care as a principle or a guideline that we could make use of. Additionally, I'm convinced that we need global answers for our problems, and we can only do it all together. And I think we already have many answers on how to solve problems in an anarchist way. And we are fighting in the climate justice movement and many other fights, and we're super motivated and we're learning a lot, and it's very impressive. And on the whole world, there's so many nice projects and there's so many people. And just to connect and to be more tolerant towards other groups and to be stronger together and finding different solutions and alternatives, I think that's a huge opportunity. So it fills me with hope. I can travel around the world, and every evening somebody opens the door and I will get a bed and food. So everywhere there is nice people. So let's try to learn from nature. Let's try to build up a dancing movement against the destructive ways of living. And we have solutions. We just need to communicate those solutions. But we need to speak up because we have those solutions. So we talked about this anthropotheme, this age where the human is influencing the nature. But now we will try to enter an age of cooperation and solidarity. And we are all responsible for the agriculture, also as consumers or traders. So I think there's much hope. And Ernst Goetsch always said, do it with an inner pleasure and plant the plants with love, because it's really a lot of fun. Some doctors, they say that you should just go out in the forest, so instead you could also just plant trees or plants. So we are looking for support in many different areas. So if you want to participate, work on the fields, or join the team, take over responsibility, feel invited. You find us on social media. You can follow us. I just opened up a Telegram group, which is in the process of being structured. So there is Mastodon going to be created. In Mastodon, there is a quite similar discussion that I uploaded, if you're interested. And I just say, let it grow. Thanks for listening.
I don't know how much time we have for questions and stuff. You talked about a guild. If you ask questions, you have to use the microphone, you have to announce your language, make a short break, and then talk. you talked about guilds. You meant this small thing with 24 plants. I have never heard this idea. What is it? Why are we doing this? What's the idea? So the idea, like, usually we work with lines. A guild is everything thought in smaller. If I have a diverse field, I cannot make big lines everywhere. And sometimes I just have a corner. And then can I make a guild with, like, several plants that have different distribution of tasks in, like, in big lines? Also, it's way less expensive. I need less plants, and it's very nice to learn to think everything in small. When we do everything in small and learn and make mistakes, it's a lot better than when we think big and make mistakes. Then we do a lot more work, which afterwards we regret. In which language do you want the question? I can do in German or English. So first of all, thanks for sharing, and I really think you're doing big, good projects, and it's important to have this topic in our movement. And I just want to name something that the SDGs are named as an example, which is contradicting the fair share approach, because it says there also that economic growth is one of the principles. So I think we should see that critical, and I think it's not the best orientation we can use. And talking about the individual footprint, we have to be aware of the fact that it was an idea by Shell company to move the problems that the system is producing towards the individual responsibility, but we should never lose from sight that also fossil industry is causing a lot of problems. And then a small remark about the dying of species. SDGs are the Sustainable Development Goals. You talked about the dying of species. And the loss of diversity can lead to the fact that we cannot continue developing medicine. But I think that's an old medical model. I think that we cannot move everything from animal to and transfer it to humans. I think, like what I understand, in the end, you also don't do that. We have to not understand the nature and animals as services and reduce them to their productivity. Yeah, I agree with many things you said, and I share them also. I could add on 10 things on top of that that we should think about it critically, and we touched many different areas, and still we have to go on a path that is possible for people, also together with people in the Global South, where things have to be thought differently. I share with you that the SDGs are to be seen critical, but if I talk to people that could fund us, it's important to refer to them. For example, if we need money, I don't care who is giving it to us. I don't see animals and plants as giving a service, but I see them in a connected system. We also make zones for wilderness. It's an area where there's nothing exploited. We discuss that a lot. What is the usage of these areas? People say you can go there and meditate. I think we should just not go there. I think I'm also trying to reduce the complexity when I do these kind of speeches. And for me, it's important to find common basis and walk on this path with many different people. And with the individual fingerprint, I share with you the concerns, but still I think it's also important to see the individual responsibility of how we live.
Uh,
I don't know. I'm just interpreting. Is there the possibility that in Senegal or in Portugal we can go and visit? Yes, of course, that's possible. You can take my contact and I will reply to you. We're happy about people that come and visit and support the project and want to learn. There's never enough people. Best you stay longer, as long as possible. I want to ask how I can find out which plants I can put in a guild if I want to try it out. How can I find that out? Yeah, so there's more and more books where you can read these kind of things. You have to read and talk to people that understand of plants. It's very complex and you have to start somewhere. You have to understand which roles and tasks you need in a system. So it's important to understand syntropic agriculture. I recommend you to participate in a workshop that I'm offering. Thanks a lot. There's another question. I want to give a hint about the white saviorism, about how much recognition white people get for this kind of projects, which just to say here that there's a white person that we see as a man that is presenting this project, that he can go to, that these projects go to places where this indigenous knowledge has been for many years, and then white people came and colonized and destroyed this knowledge. So we have here people asking for donations for this project, when at the same time indigenous people that have lived these ways for centuries are still persecuted and discriminated. And this also leads to the fact that this kind of knowledge, historical knowledge, like permaculture, is sort of capitalized. I tried to refer to this also in my lecture, that this is indigenous knowledge, and I share your concerns, but I'm still doing it, even being a white man, and I try to think about it as much as I can and be careful and attentive, but of course it's a small line and I live together with people and I don't make money from it, and I think a lot about it. On the other hand, I think it's also facing reality that in practice you have to live with these contradictions. Another question that I had, for example, I think it's very great and I feel like it would be nice to visit Senegal, but for me there's a problem to take a plane to go there. So I wanted to ask if there's another possibility to go there. I think it's kind of dangerous that all the people that are here will fly to Senegal. That's very true. I also see this problem. I have been there by car a lot, but that's not a lot better. Just that there will be a good car down there that can be used. I also see a huge problem in that. That's why I only go there for once a year and for a longer time period. And I try to make it as sustainable as possible. And we have a lot of these questions where people want to come by for 3 weeks and I'm like, well, and you want to come for this time by plane. You can go by bike, you can hitchhike, you can take public transport, you can stay there, you can walk. It's all possible. But that, of course, takes a lot of time, but in the end, it's better to travel slower because you will learn more and experience more. But also, I think about in which case it makes sense to take a plane and when it doesn't, and I try to plant as many trees as possible. Last question.
Talk, please, because otherwise you cannot arrange
the
song.
Okay, so the question will be in English. Yes. So I guess my question is, are there any numbers on permaculture? Because I'm really happy that there's a discussion, and I think it's quite telling that this, I don't see any discussions on agriculture outside of this in one of the biggest anarchist conferences in the last years. But I have a lot of doubts about whether permaculture can challenge industrial agriculture. And I would just, you know, is there a number? Is there a way to compare acre per acre inputs? Because I guess my experience is most permaculture projects are just like the main input is funding on this great idea that, that maybe it could work.
That's a good question. Thanks for that. We try to document as much as possible. Numbers, money, and so on, and monitor the systems and how much is growing, what do we take out of it. The thing is that in this capitalist world, we cannot have a true cost account, and other agriculture is has big funding from outside, and the cost of destroying nature is not included in the price. So by this, I think everything that we do is adding up to a positive result, but maybe not in a similar way like industrial agriculture, but seeing also the sustainable systems that develop from it and the high quality and of food and the healing plants. I'm convinced that it's working. I'm thinking about this a lot. I know all these projects that work by funding and workshops. I think this is what we want and do, bigger fields, more professional ways of working, and that we have to believe that it will work because we don't have a different chance. Because the other systems that we work against, they destroy our basis of living. We can continue this discussion later if you want. That was it. Thank you. Let it grow.